Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Can a restaurant writer draw a valid conclusion about the food and service if she is recognized by the staff? When Leslie Brenner joined the Dallas Morning News as its food critic in 2009, she was adamant that critics should try to preserve their anonymity in order to avoid any potential special treatment that might make her experience different from any other patrons. 5 years later, Brenner has become aware that her face is recognized by restaurateurs all over town and recently decided to visit restaurants without trying to conceal her physical identity. Readers have been fascinated by the move, but the decision has Brenner's own critics, including her peers at other publications, suggesting she's being lazy or even hypocritical. She's controversial among restaurant owners in town as well, particularly those who worry that her five-star rating system is too reductive and can be damaging to the livelihoods of establishments that end up with fewer than 3 stars. Recently, the team behind Proof and Pantry made a well-publicized effort to prevent Brenner from reviewing them at all. Given all the talk about Leslie Brenner lately, we invited her here to discuss how she approaches her work and why she is changing tactics now. Leslie, welcome back to Think.
Thank you so much, Chris.
So how long do you think, first of all, that you were truly anonymous at the restaurants you reviewed in this part of Texas?
Well, I feel fortunate that I was able to begin this job and really not be recognized. Before I started, I had managed to cleanse what images of me there were online. I sort of scrubbed the internet of them. So if you had Googled me for, I think, the first 4 years I was in the job, you would not find an image of me. So when I came here, I knew nobody. I was fortunate because of that. And so I think I was really able to operate pretty well for a couple of years, usually not being recognized. And one of the problems was I had published a number of books. And so there were little author photos of me that would get, you know, blown up in big grainy Xeroxes and taped up in kitchens. And so people, people were looking for me based on those, you know, those 10-year-old images that were, you know, a thinner, younger me, but me nevertheless. And that's how I started. And I think that what happened to me was something that happens to every critic in every major market. Especially, you know, daily newspaper critics who dine out, you know, I dine out 5 or 6 nights a week, probably 48 to 50 weeks a year. So it's a lot of dining out. What happens is somebody figures, a restaurant server or, you know, staff person, hostess, whoever, figures out who you are. They spot you. They show everybody else in the restaurant. They point you out. Everybody memorizes your face. And then restaurant staffers, they move around. They're going to, you know, get a job at the next hot restaurant. And when they arrive, if I show up, they're going to show everybody who I am. And so once that starts happening, it happens very quickly. And it's, you know, with the speed of a good Facebook post, everybody's in on it.
Is there a particular thing that would happen that made you realize, okay, I've been blown here?
It was more a feeling. It was more like you could just sort of sense walking into the restaurant. I don't know, everybody stands up a little straighter and you just sort of, it's a little bit of attention, a little bit of a, you know, you just feel like you're being taken care of. And it's funny because I think, you know, I've learned a lot in the last few years. And one of the things I've learned is that when you are recognized, you can still tell, you know, good service is good service. And even if they know who you are, a lot of the time what happens is they lavish you with service. It's like too much service. They're kind of all over you. They interrupt a lot. They're there every 10 seconds to refill your water glass, and it's just too much. It's uncomfortable. So I think sometimes it can backfire. But a good critic can see what good service is, even if he or she is recognized.
You didn't used to think so.
I used to strongly believe that you had a very different experience when you were not recognized. And I still believe that it's a very different experience. But I think what I've learned as a critic over the years, and it's been a real evolution, is that that you learn how to read these things. I'm looking at other tables, seeing the plates that are coming out at the table next to me. Is that a bigger portion than I have or a smaller portion than I have? Is somebody refilling their wine at appropriate intervals? Are they being treated the same way we are? So, you know, I think that before I was really in the job, and I did have, you know, experience as a restaurant critic, but I was never a full-time critic until I came here to take this position. I was the stand-in critic for when I was at the LA Times, where I was food editor for many years. I would fill in for our extremely talented restaurant critic at the time, S. Irene Verbila, when she would go on vacation. I would fill in, so I knew what it was like. But I think, you know, once I became much more experienced, I think I understood that, yes, it's great not to be recognized, but if you are recognized, you can still do your job just as well. So I think that, you know, if there are readers who are worried that I won't be able to do my job as well, I think they need not be worried.
Do you feel like your primary purpose is to entertain your readers, to educate your readers, or to sort of serve as like a consumer watchdog so that they're not spending their good money on a nice dinner out somewhere that they're going to be disappointed with?
I think it's all of those things, and in varying degrees. But I think, you know, you're absolutely right to focus on readers, because the readers are who I work for. I don't work for the restaurants. And so if there are restaurants who are unhappy with the way I'm covering them, or if they feel like we don't want to be covered, well, you know what? We don't work for you. We work for our readers. And we're, you know, we're the press. And there's a reason that we have a free and open press. And that's because, you know, the press is looking out for regular people. That's our role in our society. So that's what we do. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think the two biggest parts, the two most important parts of the writing, I think, are it needs to be a good read, for sure. Otherwise, nobody's going to read it. And I want it to be, you know, I want readers to get something out of it, whether they're the kind of reader who makes a lot of money and is going to be able to go out to these restaurants, many of which are very expensive, some of which are taco stands. So, you know, but there are plenty of readers who don't want to spend their money on expensive restaurants or can't spend their money on expensive restaurants. And I want what I write to be a good read for them as well, and for them to feel like, oh, I feel like I've been to that restaurant. But probably my number one, I feel like my biggest mission is to look out for the reader. And is this a good place, you know, for the reader to be spending his or her money? Is it going to be a good experience? What is the experience going to be like? You know, what, and then the educational part that you mentioned, what is this type of food supposed to be like, and how does what they're doing in this restaurant measure up to that? But also, what is this chef or restaurateur trying to express, and is it being expressed well?
Do you think it's always an art form? I mean, sometimes a good meal is just a good meal. Is that not sufficient if a chef is capable of doing something else?
I think that whenever you cook from the heart, it's going to be good, and it's going to taste good, and it doesn't have to be fancy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, chefs have varying degrees of ambition in terms of their cooking, and restaurants have varying degrees of ambition in terms of their cooking. If a restaurant is not doing, you know, if the food it's putting out there is not very ambitious, but it's really well done, it's going to be a positive review. It's not going to be a five-star review, because if you're doing stuff that just isn't that complicated or interesting, it can't be a five-star review. Five-star is, wow, this is one of the best and most interesting restaurants in the country, or, you know, a really outstanding example, destination dining in Dallas.
Well, let's listen here. We had assistant producer Lindsay Connect talk this morning with restaurateur Shannon Nguyen. He's not crazy, and a lot of his colleagues are not crazy about the five-star system that you have, among other things.
The five-star system that Leslie has tries to delineate restaurants that are at a caliber that Dallas just doesn't have. I mean, we have two, quote, five-star restaurants. the stratosphere that she's judging these restaurants is at Le Bernardin level or Per Se level, and we simply don't have those restaurants here yet. We might never. A kindergartner can see that 2 stars is not good, right? On a 5-star system, 2 stars is less than half. In what universe is that good? I don't think that any restaurateur in this city, nor chef, is opposed to being critiqued. They simply want a rating system that's fair to their product. And that's not asking too much. And so one of the ways that we came up with is a system that simply breaks them up like Addison did in the old days, which was food, service, and atmosphere.
Do you worry that putting Dallas on a different scale would actually keep it where it is as far as attracting restaurants that were of a higher caliber?
Not at all. I mean, nothing. A rating scale isn't holding someone back from being extraordinary. But her calibration of that star system of extraordinary is simply not attainable here.
That was restaurateur Shannon Nguyen. He owns 26 restaurants, including Dallas Spots, Lark in the Park, and Meddlesome Moth, which in fact was reviewed by the Dallas Morning News today by Mark Mamos. He gave it 3 stars. My guest this hour is Dallas Morning News restaurant critic Leslie Brenner. What'd you think? What do you want to respond to?
Well, I'm frankly a little bit surprised, and I would say that with all due respect to Mr. Nguyen, I think he's really selling Dallas short. I think Dallas has become a really amazing dining destination. I think we have some world-class restaurants here, and I think that, you know, to say that we can't be competing on a national level, I'm really frankly surprised to hear him say that, because I think we absolutely can. So that's one thing. That said, you know, I think that there's no perfect star rating system. And because of that, you know, I'm always looking at it. I've been talking to my editorial superiors for more than a year about, you know, our star rating system should be evolving. And, you know, so it's something that we've had an active conversation about for many, many months. And we are open to hearing what the industry would like to see. You know, we always are open to hearing from restaurants and chefs, and we're definitely open to that. And if we do wind up tweaking the star system, it will be on our own terms. We will certainly consider anything that the restaurant community has to say about it. But again, we don't work for the restaurant community. We work for our readers.
Do you have to think about the fact that you don't work for the restaurant community, but you have at least some influence on how they do financially, that without your input, maybe nothing would change for them?
Well, I think that that's very flattering to suggest that I have that much power. I don't think I do. I think that I'm one voice among many. And I think, you know, I've heard that idea bandied about that. Like, you know, I know that when I criticize a restaurant that, you know, people are, you know, very dependent on the business doing well and everything. But I think it's an exaggeration to say that I can close a restaurant. I don't believe it. I think that, you know, and I know plenty of restaurants that I've given less than glowing reviews that are thriving. So I really just don't see that. You know, that said, I think it's very important for any kind of critic to understand what it feels like to be on the receiving end of criticism. And, you know, as someone who's written books, I've been criticized. So I do know what that feels like, and I keep it in mind.
We're speaking this hour with Dallas Morning News restaurant critic Leslie Brenner about her recent decision to stop trying to conceal her identity when she's visiting a restaurant for a review, about her 5-star rating system, and about her approach to criticism overall. If you'd like to jump in on this conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Leslie Brenner. She is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. Recently, she announced that she will stop trying to conceal her physical identity when she is visiting a restaurant for a review. She will, as she has said, continue to make a reservation under a pseudonym. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Okay, I want to talk about what happened at Proof and Pantry recently. To summarize, and correct me if I have any of the details incorrect, you went with your husband and another couple, including Kevin and Willie of the Dallas Morning News, to Proof and Pantry. You had a meal. The check would have been like $450. You were presented with a bill that said, "This is complimentary." First of all, for people who aren't journalists and don't work in the restaurant business, explain to folks why it would be incorrect for you to have accepted that complimentary meal.
Well, you know, in general, journalists can never accept any, you know, gifts or perks or anything from subjects that they're covering. So that means for a restaurant critic, you can never accept complimentary food. And when I make a review visit, the newspaper, the Dallas Morning News, always covers all of the meals that my guests and I consume. And that would be over the course of at least two visits for every review. So I go with guests in tow and, you know, because I need to taste a lot of dishes in order to write the review. But it's always absolutely essential that I pay for everything I consume, whether or not I'm reviewing the restaurant.
Was that your first or second visit there?
That was my first visit there.
Mm-hmm. And have you been back?
I have been back.
You announced recently that you are, in fact, going to write a review of Proof and Pantry, even though initially they expressed that they didn't wish to be covered in that way.
When during that first visit, when they presented me with a check that had a zero balance on it, they said that Michael Martinson, one of the owners of the restaurant, said that the reason they were trying to comp me was that they didn't want to be reviewed. And I explained to him that it's not his decision whether the restaurant is reviewed or not. It's our decision. We decide what we review. And also that it was not really possible to comp me because in any case, even if he wouldn't take my credit card, I can pay cash, which is what I did. I left cash on the table. So yes, I explained that to him.
So given that whole incident, and the review comes out next week in the paper, and online, you're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't, right? Because if the review is negative, people will say, well, clearly she was influenced by whatever awkwardness ensued. And if the review is positive, people might say, well, she didn't want it to appear as if she was influenced by what ensued when you were given a check for nothing and went back and forth with them about whether to do a review.
I think, Chris, that people who know me and people who have worked with me over the years know one thing about me, like the main thing about me, is that I'm incredibly fair and optimistic. And no matter, you know, restaurateurs can talk trash about me or whatever, I'm still going to give my honest opinion and be fair in the review. And, you know, it's really funny. I mean, my husband always thinks this is really funny about me, that no matter what kind of horrible experience I've had in a restaurant, the next time I walk in, I'm saying to him, you know, on the way from the car, something like, well, you know, maybe they had an off night last time. I'm thinking it's going to be really good tonight. You know, I'm always like looking for the good experience. So I think that I don't really see it as a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I see it as I'm going to be fair, as I always am.
So let's talk about the dust up with John Tazar, who is a well-known chef in this part of the country. We'll be careful about language here, but you two got into a Twitter discussion. Do you want to call it that? Do you want to call it an argument?
No, I wouldn't characterize it that way at all because I wasn't responding. He was tweeting obscenities at me and continues to do. So I don't know if he's still using obscenities, but his Twitter stream is this like unending, you know, invective against me. So I wouldn't call it an argument really or a dust up. I would call it a chef who has a problem with me tweeting loud and long about it on Facebook. And, you know, it's And, you know, the other thing that I'd like to point out is, you said, you know, you mentioned that there's a group of chefs who, you know, are have, I can't remember exactly what words you use, but that are having difficulty with me or disagree with. It's actually not a big group of chefs. It's three restaurateurs who have made themselves known. It's John Tazar, it's Michael Martinson, and Sal Jafar II, who own Proof and Pantry and Driftwood. And it's Shannon Wynn, who owns that group of restaurants that you mentioned. Other than that, there have not been. This is not a mainstream group of chefs. This is the way I see it. It's a fringe group. They've been making noise for months. They continue to make noise. Some of the food bloggers have picked up on it and are, you know, taking up the cause. I'm not really sure why, but I don't feel that it's the mainstream opinion about me in Dallas. And I think that if you talk to some of the other chefs around town, probably would be interesting to hear what they have to say about me. Nobody asks them, but, you know, I think that could be very interesting. But I think, you know, I really love the dining scene in Dallas, and I feel like it's an exciting place to be. Our readers want to hear what I write about it. Our readers are really excited about reading about the developments of modern Texas cuisine and the way the Texas wine industry is coming along. There's so much exciting stuff going on here that it's the fact that these people are making so much noise about these complaints when, by the way, we've always been willing to listen and sit down with them is just beyond me. There's one other thing I'd like to say about that, and that is, you know, there was this meeting that was blogged about at Proof and Pantry with all these disgruntled people, only three of whom were named, by the way, in the story. And, you know, Michael Martinson and Sal Jafar are complaining that, you know, that they have all these concerns and they would like to, you know, just like to engage about it. Well, In the story that happened after my first visit to Proof and Pantry, when I left $500 in cash on the table, Martinson and Jafar took the cash to the Dallas Morning News the next day and tried to leave it there unsuccessfully and talked with some of my editorial superiors. I was not able to be at that meeting. I was on my way to the office and, you know, it had broken up by the time I got there. And our editor, Bob Mong, also was not able to be there. So after the meeting, you know, when some of my bosses were telling me some of the things that Martinson and Jafar were concerned about, I said, you know what? Why don't we talk about this? Like, it would be great if I could talk to them about this. I called up, after consulting with Bob Mong, I called up Michael Martinson and I invited him to sit down and talk about it. And he accepted. I said, you know, you can bring Sal Jafar. I'll bring Bob Mong. This will be a great conversation. And we had it all set up, and they canceled at the last minute. So when they say that when they make it sound like I don't want to discuss this stuff and I'm not open to it, I think that's very disingenuous.
Somebody thinks it would make good TV to put you and John Tazar together.
Actually, I think it's John Tazar probably who thinks that, or at least his people. I was very shocked over the weekend to receive an email. You know, John Tazar has said some really horrible things about me, many of which are defamatory. And so, you know, it seems to me, if you read his Twitter feed, he has absolutely no regard for me professionally or in any other way. So I was extremely stunned to receive an email from a producer of a reality show in Los Angeles. She told me that she's shopping around a reality show with John Tazar, and the idea of the show is that he would be going to visiting restaurants around the country and reviewing them from the point of view of a chef. And wouldn't it be fun if I could be on the show with him and we could be the critic and the chef reviewing these restaurants together to get both points of view? So, it just makes me wonder whether all of this invective is a way of getting publicity for a reality show that doesn't exist yet. I don't know. I was floored.
So you didn't say sign me up?
No, I told them that I was flattered, but respectfully declined the invitation.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Victor in Dallas. Hey, Victor.
Hi. Hi, Chris.
Hi,
Leslie. Victor Ornelas.
Hi, Victor.
It was great to hear your voice. I got in the car and turned it on. There you are. So, you know our background. Grew up in the West Coast, lived in L.A., been in New York, New Orleans, great restaurant towns. But how would you rate our restaurant scene? Am I being too parochial? But I totally disagree with Shannon Wynn in terms of what he's saying about our restaurant scene. I think it's pretty darn good. But how would you rate us nationally?
I think that Dallas in the last few years has really shaped up and evolved, and I think it's one of the most exciting cities in the country to dine right now. And part of that is because of what's going on in modern Texas cuisine. I think there's some chefs doing, you know, some really, really interesting things with the amazing products we have here in Texas, the grass-fed beef and, you know, some of the farms that are, you know, now growing custom vegetables for the chefs. And, you know, between the products and these great ideas and the Texan traditions, Southern traditions, Mexican traditions, Louisiana traditions that all come together so deliciously here in Texas. I think it's and chefs are interpreting that in really creative and interesting ways. And I find it just absolutely delicious. And we have a regional character here at a very high level of cooking that you don't find many other places around the country.
Can I ask you this? You eat out, is it 20 times a month, approximately, 25?
At least, yeah. At least 20, 25 or 30 times, probably.
Like, at some point, it seems to me like that would be a whip. Like, of course you're not going to like a lot of things because, my goodness, you've eaten, like, a $100 dinner six other times that month. Do you have to, like, combat that? And do you worry that it creeps into the way you assess what you're eating?
I consider it, but, you know, it's funny. You know, you want to give yourself reality checks now and then, and I feel more often. I think that when I first moved here, in which was early 2009, I was much more frequently disappointed. So I feel like, you know,
is that you? Is that about you or the restaurants? Do you think?
Well, I don't think that I'm less discerning than I used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that what you're talking about is, you know, that could be a natural thing, like some kind of palate fatigue or something. But I haven't found that to happen. So, which I think is another testament to the fact that what's going on here is really pretty cool.
How much does the decor of a restaurant play into the way you assess your overall experience?
It's very important. In terms of the way I assess my overall experience, it's in a review. The most important things are the cooking, the ideas on the plate, the service, and then the decor probably, and the value, which is also taken into consideration. But it's one of a number of things. I think in terms of how much we enjoy a restaurant experience, I think it's hugely important.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Gabriel in Arlington. Hi, Gabriel.
Yes. I have a question for your guest, mm-hmm. and it's about service and what kind of role the service plays into the rating. So, for example, so she goes and there's a server that's maybe has a table that's very demanding and that's placing stress on other tables. Does she take that into account? Does she make sure to watch what other tables the servers have? And if those tables might be too demanding before she puts the rating down for that restaurant?
That's a really good question, Gabriel. I think, you know, it's really when I come up with a rating for a restaurant review, it's a holistic process. It's not, you know, it's not something where I take each little piece of it and assign, you know, a ratio and then come up with a score or anything like that. It's more a general feeling, and it's generally not that hard to come up with the rating. When I criticize service, you know, if I were to complain that I wasn't getting quick enough service, which it's very, very rare that I even complain about something like that. I always look around and see what it looks like is going on. And when I single out a server for a mistake, I think very carefully about it, and I absolutely try to take it in the context of what's going on in the restaurant.
Do you try to take into account, like, the general palate of your readership?
Oh, that's an interesting question. The general palate of my readership.
So, in other words, people might be happy having eaten something that doesn't, maybe isn't prepared the way it seems to you that it should be prepared, but that's what they've become accustomed to. You understand what I'm saying? particularly for people who aren't eating out at high-end places all the time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think I do. The thing is, you know, sometimes I get comments on reviews saying, you know, you're not objective. You're not approaching this in an objective way. And the thing about restaurant criticism or any kind of criticism is it's subjective journalism by definition. So this is just one person's opinion, and this is my opinion, and it's about, you know, and I can only address food from the point of view of my own palate, but I do try to understand, like, there are people who might like this.
Have you seen the movie Chef?
Yes, I did.
So when you saw it, I mean, were you moved at all by the scene where Jon Favreau's character sort of goes after the chef and talks about how he's not getting under his skin, but of course he is? Or were you thinking like, oh, poor Oliver Platt, there he is being harassed by an unhinged guy with a roll of expensive knives in his trunk?
I had first of all, I loved the movie. I thought it was so much fun and so sweet. And I felt for the chef. I mean, he's in this existential quandary, right? He's in a position where he either has to cook from his heart and do what he really wants to do, or do what his boss is saying and you know, turn out the favorites that everybody loves that his boss is saying that he has to be cooking. He chooses what seems probably like the safe path, and it's the wrong decision. And he, it's like, it's what I'm talking about, cooking from the heart. It's funny, I feel like people have vilified the critic in that movie. It was oddly, because I think what happens in that movie is the critic nails the chef for not cooking from his heart. And he's right. And once that chef starts cooking from his heart, his whole life turns around and his cooking is great. And he's cooking those, you know, it's funny because, you know, when I'm looking at the restaurant food that, you know, the tasting menu that he puts out in the beginning of the movie, and it didn't do anything for me. And when he starts making those Cuban sandwiches on the trucks, all I could think was, I want that Cuban sandwich.
My guest is Leslie Brenner. She is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join it, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Leslie Brenner, who is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Did you ever actually try to physically disguise yourself? I had a great conversation with Ruth Reichel years ago about all of her crazy disguises.
I think it was maybe it wasn't a full year. It was not that long after I started the job. I did up my hair in a crazy thing, and I have a lot of different glasses, so I put on some crazy glasses, and I really tried to make myself look different. My son, he must have been like 12 or 13 at the time, said, "Mom, you are not going out looking like that." And I said, "Yes, I am." And I showed up at the restaurant meeting an acquaintance, and it was a restaurant I had already made one visit to, and I worried that maybe I had been figured out. I wasn't sure. And I walked in, and the server, who was the same server who had served me the previous time, said, "Oh, so nice to see you again." So, you know, and before I came here, I tried.
But that
know,
might just be good service, right? They might say that to me and I'm not recognized.
It could have been. But I thought, oh, you know, it's just silly for me to try to, you know, before I even started the job, I went to a wig shop and I tried on a whole bunch of wigs and tried to, you know, I really thought about doing it like that. And I just looked like a woman wearing a wig. It was just like it just didn't work for me. And the other thing about that is if you dine with the same people over and over again, you know, what you're going to have your friends disguise themselves too and your family. If I didn't dine out frequently with my husband and son, I would never see them. So, you know, I think the idea of a disguise is a little impractical.
Is it hard when you have to take like acquaintances and other people like to sort of host a dinner party that often throughout the year?
Well, it's, you know, it's when I'm on a review visit, I do need to be focusing on the food. So the hardest thing is when it's a new restaurant, I'm with people that I don't know well. I'm trying to be, you know, sociable and get to know these people. And I'm at the same time having to memorize every bite of everything. And it's a real balancing act. So, yeah, that's challenging. And you know, so I think this happens for most critics, probably. You have a few people you tend to dine with a lot. They usually have good palates. They usually are compliant about ordering what's good for you to have them be ordering. And, you know, and they know the drill. And they know that we're going to be, you know, tasting each other's food. And, you know, if I'm just meeting somebody, I do feel a little funny sticking my fork in their plate.
1-800. Have you ever had anybody refuse who didn't fully understand what you were trying to do? I mean, not that you would not. I'm guessing you ask before you take a bite of something. But are there people who are like, I don't share my plate?
Yeah, no. I mean, I always lay the ground rules with new diners who haven't done this with me before. I always lay the ground rules first. But I, you know, so they understand we'll be sharing things. But I always tell the rules are always this. My guests get to order first, and everybody has to order different things.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Emily in Dallas. Hi, Emily.
Hi. My question is, whenever you go to a restaurant, does your experience or review have anything to do with previous genres of the same type of food? Like if you have Mexican food at one restaurant and it's really good and go to another restaurant, do you ever think back to that restaurant and that type of food and the taste and so on?
Emily, that's a great question. And I think that one of the things that a good restaurant critic can do is put a restaurant into context. So if I go to a Mexican restaurant, and then I'm writing about it and thinking about, you know, I need to think about how it stacks up against the other Mexican restaurants in Dallas. So I think that it is something I'm always thinking about. Like even, you know, I don't, you know, so, okay, I love this cochinita pibil or, you know, whatever the dish would be. And then I think back on one I had in another restaurant. I wouldn't compare it in the review usually to the same dish in a different restaurant. But I am always thinking about how does this restaurant fit in to the general scene and other restaurants of its type.
Do you find that your memory is equally strong if you're trying to think about flavor or texture or visual presentation, or is there one that really remains with you above the others?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you know, one of the best things ever to happen to me and every other critic, I think, is the fact that, first of all, iPhones have such good cameras in them, or, you know, and
it's
also
not considered weird to take a picture, right?
Exactly. You know, when I started doing this, I wouldn't take pictures at the table, or I would do it surreptitiously. But now everybody does it. So if I do it, it's, you know, it doesn't really make me stick out. Of course, now I don't mind so much if I stick out, but which is also a relief. But for the visual thing, I don't, you know, when you memorize anything, I think you kind of focus on it and then it helps you remember it. I don't have to focus as much on the visual because I know I'm going to have a picture of it later to refer to. And it's also a great memory jog. It makes taking notes so much easier. But I think that the tastes and the textures and the smells are, you know, they stay with me.
Is it strange to have the sense sometimes when you sit down to dine that the staff is terrified of you? They've been like warned to make this the best experience ever and they are just sort of nervous?
I hate that feeling. You know, it really breaks my heart. And I think there's some really, really good servers in this town. And I feel like generally I'm very forgiving in my reviews with service because I know that, you know, and I know they're under a tremendous lot of pressure. And I think I tend to be harsher on the service in a place where they're charging really top dollar and really trying to present, you know, a kind of dining where top-notch service is really important because you're paying, you know, $40 for a plate.
Are you a good tipper?
I always tip about the same amount, which is 20%. And I tip on the whole thing, including the tax. So it really is a little more than 20% on the food and beverage tab.
Regardless of the service,
regardless,
or the experience.
I don't want to have the tip have anything. I always feel like it's best just to leave a generous tip. And
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Kirk in Southlake. Hi, Kirk.
Good afternoon, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
For your show. I was curious whether Leslie thinks, or I don't know if she'd have a perspective on whether or not the Dallas dining scene has an impact on our own kitchens, what we're cooking in our own kitchens, and how that affects what we're kind of buying at the stores and that sort of thing.
Oh, great question. I love to cook, and I love to be invited to friends' house for dinner. So I wish I really had a strong opinion, but I get invited to dinner at friends' houses so rarely that I don't really know what people are cooking at home so much. You know, I know about the wonderful recipes that we're running in the Dallas Morning News, and I know that, you know, we're trying to become a city that has a much more vibrant farmers market scene, and I think that's all great, but it's not really a question that I can really intelligently speak to, I'm afraid.
Why do people love eating food out of the side of a truck?
Maybe because it's casual and fun, and there's not great expectations. It's usually not that expensive. I don't know. I think it comes to you, like, or it's where you happen to be. You don't have to valet park.
Yeah. Do you think that's going anywhere? Do you think the food truck movement is here to stay?
I don't know. You know, I really wish that the food trucks that we were seeing here were a little bit more creative and unusual. And I think that in the cities where it's really gotten a lot of traction, like Austin or Portland or Los Angeles, I think that what's coming out on the trucks is something really unusual that you can't get in a restaurant or a fast casual place. And, you know, I haven't been terribly, terribly impressed, I'm afraid to say, with much of the food truck, many food truck experiences I've had so far here.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the phone, we go to Elizabeth in Fairfield, California. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. My question was, how often do you go out and revisit establishments that you maybe critiqued before on your own dime?
Oh, places I go on my own dime. That's one of my favorite subjects to think about. not very often, only because my dining schedule is kind of, you know, really jam-packed with places that I have to visit for work. But there are a couple places that I love to return to. And it's funny, sometimes I mention in a review, this is a place I would go on my own dime and here's what I would order.
How often do you you have to get yourself in the mood to order every course, right? You don't go into a restaurant and say, I'm just eating light tonight. I'm going to split something. You have to get an appetizer and a salad and a soup course and dessert. I mean, even if you're just taking a bite of everything, are there times when you just don't feel like eating that much?
Well, sure. But, you know, it's funny because the whole, like, managing the appetite, it is an issue. And it's something that, you know, I think the way I balance it is I don't eat much or anything often on the days that I'm going out to dinner for work. So, you know, I mean, today I had an apple for breakfast and that's going to be it till dinner time. So, so I generally have a pretty good appetite when I'm dining out, and it's, you know, but you're right. It's something that has to be managed.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next on the phone to Eric in Dallas. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how you doing, Leslie?
Hi, Eric. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. I just had a quick question. I was wondering, have you ever had an experience where you did a review at a restaurant and the review wasn't terribly good, but looking back, that possibly the review was due to just the restaurant wasn't really in top form that night, and possibly, 95% of the other times it would have been much better, but it just happened to be in a bad time when you arrived?
Well, I'm very glad you brought that up. It's one of the reasons that I make at least two visits to every restaurant, and often more, because you're right. Every restaurant can have a bad night. It can happen, it can happen even at the greatest restaurants. So I always make more than one visit. And if the two visits don't really align well in terms of quality, if I feel like it was really, considerably better one night than the other, I go back a third time. And sometimes I go back a fourth time, So I also, it's funny. I'm thinking about one restaurant. I'm thinking about, actually, it's Driftwood. It's one of Michael Martinson's restaurants. And they changed chefs. And they brought a new chef in. This was, I think, last April. And I gave it the amount of time I normally give a restaurant when they get a new chef, which is about a month before I set foot in the door. And I thought I went, oh, they're just not there yet. So I'm just not even going to think about the review yet. I'm going to let them, get on their feet. And then I waited a couple more months to go back. And so, I really do try to be fair and beyond fair. I try to think, oh, is this a restaurant that's having trouble getting going? I think some critics might not even do that, but I always feel like I'm going to give them their best shot and see what happens. And I also do re-reviews, and I, by the same token, if I've given a restaurant a really positive review and then I happen to go back a year later and I feel like the quality has really sunk, and that happens a lot, then I may re-review it. Or if I give a restaurant a really harsh review, and then, I'll say, I'm going to check in again and see what's going on there. Sometimes I'm impressed, and I'll re-review it. I'll do an update review, even if there's not a new chef or nothing major has changed.
What do you do with people who are not in the restaurant business, not in the journalism business, who say to you, oh, you absolutely have to try the X at Cafe Y, and it's something that you have tried and really don't think is any good, and like, are you in a weird position? In that case, do you try to temper your opinions just to be polite, or do you say, that is absolutely abhorrent and no one should do that?
I try to be polite, and I also don't like lying, so, I don't know. Sometimes I'll say, actually, I was with friends the other night who were raving about some restaurant that I just said, well, that wasn't my experience there. Maybe it's gotten a lot better since I reviewed it. Just try to say something.
All right. Can you give us any preview on what we'll hear about Proof and Pantry?
I can't, but I can tell you that about 2 hours ago, we posted the Best in DFW Chef story, including Chef of the Year, which was just revealed. And that's really exciting. And you could find that at dallasnews.com/restaurants.
Way to get the plug in. Thank you. Leslie Brenner is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. It's been a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
It was great being here, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered today by Justin Martin. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.